One of the biggest productivity hurdles is losing your data. Your computer crashes, you haven't backed stuff up, you've been meaning to, but you just never got around to it. That's where CrashPlan comes in. CrashPlan has been around since 2001, and they're a pioneer provider of cloud-based data protection and recovery services, both to individuals and businesses. And I guess ultimately, you've got to ask yourself, how much are your ideas worth, especially when you lose them? Whether it's a business plan, your images, your spreadsheets, your audio files, any of the files you use to work or manage your home. They've got options for everyone from solo creators to growing businesses. CrashPlan works efficiently in the background while you work, encrypting and sending all your new or changed files to their secure cloud every 15 minutes. And then if something happens to your files, your hard drive crashes, your cat knocks over a cup of coffee onto your laptop, or you just accidentally delete a file, your files are just a click away. CrashPlan makes it simple to restore some or all of your data with unlimited version retention. CrashPlan is your ultimate rewind button. Don't let data disasters slow you down. CrashPlan has your back and keeps you moving. Go to crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. That's crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year. Back up better with CrashPlan. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm Eric Fisher, your host, as we discuss the true goal of productivity, living a more meaningful life. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with productivity expert Francesco D'Alessio. He is the host of Keep Productive, a great YouTube channel I've been following for years, and we talk about his most recent endeavor, toolfinder.co. And so in an episode where we truly go beyond the to-do list, we're talking about productivity tools. We're talking about Francesco's approach to reviewing productivity tools, his rules over tools in terms of mastering the tools instead of having them get in the way of the work that needs to be done. We take a little bit of a nostalgic trip down memory lane when we talk a little bit about Evernote and Wunderlist and how Wunderlist has come back in the form of Superlist recently. And we also talk about a three-phase approach for adopting and testing productivity apps effectively, where you research, you trial them, and you optimize them. Francesco's approach really comes down to focusing on the need first, not the app. We also talk a little bit about how we see AI factoring into productivity tools in the near future, some of which have already started to incorporate it. If you're a productivity tool nut, this is the podcast episode for you. So enjoy this conversation with Francesco D'Alessio. Well, this week it is my privilege to welcome to the show Francesco D'Alessio. Francesco, welcome to Beyond the To-Do List.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I'm very excited to chat everything tools, I guess.
Yes. So as I was saying pre-recording and then was like, okay, hold on, I got to hit record here or else we're going to miss out on all this gold, I hope. We haven't had an episode focused on tools, maybe ever, or at least in a very long time. We've talked specific tools when they've been brought up. I know at one point I had an Apple Watch debate when it was brand new with Mike Vardy and somebody else and myself, and I was kind of the moderator, and one was pro, one was con. What's funny is I think Mike Vardy was the con and then became the pro, but maybe now is the con again. I don't know. I can't keep track of how fast his opinions sway. But anyways, this is not his show. It's my show. And I'm just glad you're here. This has been long overdue. I am so glad that what you're doing exists. So if I can explain what you do, because I don't want to put it all on you. You basically are the productivity tool guy. You are documenting, finding, researching, and you do that on your site, toolfinder.co, as well as your YouTube channel, Keep Productive. How did you get into this? Like, I mean, what's your superhero productivity origin story that brought you to doing Keep Productive and then now Toolfinder?
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the first point, I think it is sort of funny that we're talking about tools on the Beyond the To-Do List. But that's the thing. Like, I'm sure we can get into the sort of framework stuff later. But yeah, like, it's actually the weirdest. I get this question on every single podcast. Like, how did you get obsessed with tools? And it weirdly goes back to when I was in school. Every year, the school would get a new registration software. and it would be up on the main screen when I was in school. And every year it would change, but every year I was obsessed with the differences between the software. And it just, I thought, that's weird that I'm interested in registration software. But it wasn't the registration software. It was more the nuances between the tools and what was different. So to skip forward another sort of 5-8 years, then I decided to start a YouTube channel about productivity tools. And at the time, it probably a couple of years in, Mike Vardy was like, look, Francesco, you're going to get overwhelmed with how many productivity tools there are and how many different variations there were. And I 100% took his advice on, because I see Mike as like one of my internet uncles, same as Steve Dotto. They just give me fantastic advice and I just sort of try and absorb it. But I think then I went back to that time when I was in sort of school and I remember all those variations between the software and I just love it. I love keeping updated. I love pooling that information for people and helping people find the differences. And the reward you get for when you help somebody find the perfect productivity tool is so brilliant. So yeah, that's my weird origin superhero story.
Well, what's great is I now have, because of you've created toolfinder.co, I have a place that I can send people to when they're looking to figure out what tool they need. And thing is that, you know, when it comes to productivity, there's actually kind of almost a permission granted to, oh yeah, no, you can definitely dig into the tools, because in order to do the work, and in air quotes, then you have to have the right tools. And how do you know if you have the right tool unless you've done a survey of what's out there and you figured out, you know, in other words, there's a permission kind of granted there, but then there's also this dark side of it where it's, wait, you're spending all this time. I mean, it was the advice that Mike gave you, is like, be careful because you will go down a rabbit hole and you will get sucked in and then you'll never get anything actually done, even though the meta about what you're doing is you're doing work about work that's done with tools. So
it's the most unproductive job in the world.
it's the most unproductive productive job in the world or something. Yeah. It's a conundrum. I got to ask, like, I want to dive into your perspective on tools and your approach to tools. I want to share mine a little bit too, but first I want to ask kind of contextually to set all that up. You've been knee deep, or you've been, you know, been wading through and researching tools for years now. And basically as long as I've been doing this show or close to it. And my thing is what was your perspective on productivity back then when you started, and how has it changed or evolved over time?
Yeah, it's a good question, because when I first started, actually, there were a lot less tools. I think a lot of the productivity space was quite filled with getting things done by David Allen concepts, where you would only have three tools, and those three tools would be a to-do app, a notes app, and a calendar app. And now my perspective has changed quite a vast amount, because I'm able to keep up with productivity software trends. It's sort of what I do. I keep the pulse on every single day. I'm able to see that these tools are becoming much more hybrid. Artificial intelligence is starting to take the weight off jobs that you're doing with productivity tools. And there's a general sense of a productivity tool becoming much smarter now. So they've changed a lot from being about frameworks than they were now, if you know what I mean. It's a lot less about frameworks and more about jumping straight in, which is a problem in itself, and something that I like to talk about, because it is actually something that a lot of people struggle with quite a bit.
Yeah, very interesting. And for me, again, having started the show and calling it Beyond the To-Do List, you know, thinking, okay, I don't want to just talk about tools. I want to talk about, you know, productivity is the hub. And then all these spokes go off in all these different directions. And that gives you all the different topics and perspectives, et cetera. When it comes to tools specifically, my take has always been, people ask me, well, which insert here type tool should I be using? And I say, the one you'll actually use. That's kind of just been my default, because ultimately it doesn't matter if it works for somebody else or what it does or how it does it, as much as if it fits your need and you will actually use it. Because that's one of the things that breaks down, or people get into that. Again, as I was kind of talking about that dark side of productivity tools, we can, under the guise of busyness, feel like we've got momentum, but it's fake momentum. It's empty calories, if you will, that we're using or consuming to do the work in the tool and with the tool to try the tool. And then we're saying, oh no, this isn't the one. They move on to another one and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So in other words, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And there's kind of, like you said, there was at least originally kind of this, well, if you've got your note taking app, if you've got your calendar and your task management system tool chosen, those three, and you don't really need something else, then who cares? But like we've said, we've moved beyond that, especially when it comes to like intercommunicative apps talking to each other, or you using an app that at work they use this, but it doesn't really work for me. So I've got to figure out, okay, what's my expectation that they have of me in order of how much I need to use it? Let me go do my own thing in my own tool and then bring it in and import it. Or, you know, in other words, working on those tools that you use for working or researching those tools for the use of working with them can be a distraction, which again is why I love that you're, in a sense, becoming a public guinea pig for all of us when it comes to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually, I think over the years, sort of boiled down this down to a 3-part process. So I think I've almost coming up to about 800 productivity apps reviewed and checked out. It's something stupid, right? But what I typically recommend for people is try and be with a productivity app between 2 and 3 years, because this is enough time to get embedded in. It's enough time to feel comfortable. And typically it's a time when at the end of 3 years, something might happen in your life, whether that's a career change, retirement, or maybe even just a dynamic shift in whatever you're doing. So try and aim for the 3 years. And it boils down to this 3-part process called RTO. So it starts with research, which is actually the most important part of the process, and something that one of the reasons why we built Toolfinder, because we want it to be like a brain of productivity tools so that you can get every bit of contextual information about a software so that you make the right buying decision. So research is really, really fundamental. And it's not just about looking at the surface level stuff like a design or a visual. It's about writing down your needs and those fundamentals and then actually approaching the tool. And sometimes that's about looking at the frameworks you use and matching the tool to those frameworks. So for example, getting things done, the Pomodoro method, deep work, if those systems and frameworks or something you self-recommend, those frameworks are beneath you, it's important to match a tool to those ones, because a good foundation and building stuff on top of it will help create a quality relationship with that application. So once you've gone through the research phase, it's the trial phase. And this phase is actually something I recommend for people to do, is once they've picked a tool, is to spend 90 days with it, a forced 90 days, so that they actually commit to those 90 days. Because sometimes people spend a week with it and then just sort of fall back and jump back into the research progress, or maybe even a month. And 90 days will give you an indication of where you're going wrong with the tool, or why your decision was wrong, or why it was right. And during this trial period, you can write down in a journal or in a separate note, maybe if you've got a notes app, then write it on paper, is to write down all the things that it didn't work in your system for you, because this will help to establish the next bout of research for you so that you don't make those same decisions next time. But ideally, you want to do those 90 days and fall in love with the app and continue using it. And then it comes to the final phase, which a lot of people forget, is to optimize. And optimization is actually really fundamental for staying with an application in the long term. So for example, people typically ask me, Francesco, what do you use a to-do list application? I think in the last 12 years, in the last 10 of those 12 years, I've been with Todoist. And that's because I've optimized it. I know it matches to my framework. It matches to my needs. And it's sort of planned out for me to some extent, where I know that I'm going to be using it. And I just try and be an example for that system and that framework. And that's typically what I tend to want people to go through when they're looking at tools. There is that, obviously, that shiny object syndrome where you see a tool and you're like, oh, that's very nice. And sometimes that's good. You may be in the market for a tool. But if you're not in the market and everything works well, then there's no need for you to jump over to that said new shiny object.
Now, I want to jump into the T part of this, the trial part. Now, when you say 90 days, Does that mean you're porting over like everything you have in your existing, like, let's go task management system. So say you weren't using Todoist, you were using something like Things, which is what I use. Say you are going to do the trial period of that 90 days. Are you porting over everything, or are you saying, let me pick one or two projects and just run those from inside of there and see how that looks?
You can choose what you're most comfortable with. But the reason why I say 90 days is for that pressure for you to have a 90 to 95% decision from that research. Because like, if you're like half baked at 60% going into the trial, then you shouldn't do it. Because it's a fixed 90 days. You don't want to be moving stuff or starting a new system. You want to be confident on it. I remember a few years ago, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I was looking at Todoist and I was struggling with using it because I was moving into a different stage of my sort of career. And I'd used it for 6 years before. And then I looked at Things 3 and I did the same trial process. I was about 80% confident on it. Started a new project in there. So I just replicated. It's much easier with tasks than it is with notes. And after those 90 days, I said, I'm not comfortable with this. And I went back to the research part of the progress. And I actually then found some Sama, which I believed I used for 2.5 years, which I feel is a comfortable bracket. And then after 2.5 years, I moved back to Todoist. But in my 12 years, I've only used those two apps for task management. But that process allowed me to just constantly refine it. And it's okay if after 90 days you don't go well with it, but it's important not to do too many cycles. So I learned that second time that I needed certain features that would break away from that.
I like that you've got this approach that it's a cycle. It's research, trial, and optimize. Because apps and tools can be tricky. There's a rationalization that those of us in tech or who are tech enthusiasts can have if I just get this piece of equipment, this piece of hardware, or in this case, software, it's going to fix everything. It's what we use to justify, oh yeah, you know, I could upgrade my phone. Yeah. When you don't really need to.
Yeah.
So in other words, there's people that look for the app first versus the need first. How do you approach that? I mean, people are coming to your site and you want to match them with the right tool for the right need. How do you guide them through that? You know, app first or need first, or is it kind of a mixture?
So the way that I go about it is first rules over tools. So looking at your frameworks and making sure you got them confident, because rules are so important because they'll guide you through the sort of the process of finding a tool. I think if you look at it largely like, you know, like tennis players, right? I could go and buy the same racket, but I couldn't have the quality of play that Roger Federer does, right? Because it's whoever is over behind the tennis racket that does the job, right? And it's sort of like that in productivity, you know, like to some extent, a to-do list that's written on paper, a to-do list that's on your desktop, that just tick things off, very simply is the same. It's sort of like with cars as well. It's very similar to cars. A Ford Mondeo, very basic car maybe, can drive from A to B, but a Ferrari can also drive from A to B. But what is the difference? It's maybe the quality that you're experiencing. And, you know, why doesn't everyone drive a Ford Mondeo? It's because there's a difference between it. There's a level of quality. So that's why we tend to go with different types of productivity tools. But yeah, I think what you're saying like there about going to their needs is really important. So we're still constantly building on the site. So we've recently added some more like technical features like user reviews. So soon people will be able to pull information from existing users who have been using the tool for a certain amount of years and get those insights, which has been around for a while. But just from that perspective, it helps you break that down. But other information as well that hopefully sort of goes under the radar sometimes, like how long has the company been going? Where are the company based? What are their values? And also, you know, things that people forget sometimes, like budgets, like being very brutal and editorial about what is needed, because sometimes the productivity space can be quite like promotional in some extent. So we try and be that sort of middle ground. But we're hoping by maybe the end of the year, start of next year, that we want to be like a smart brain. So when you go onto the site, you ask what your job is and what the information is that you need. And then it helps you to guide you to find a tool. So it's more of a guided process. But that's going to take a little bit more time, I think, technically. Smart stuff.
Yes, yes. Well, the AI, you know, just wait a little bit longer. The AI will do it for you.
Yes. I'll be out of the job, yeah.
I love this approach. You've mentioned frameworks here a number of times, and I think some people might not fully understand what you mean by that specifically. Can you dive a little deeper into that? I think some people just, they don't get that in order for the tool to be used properly or to be trialed properly or even researched properly for that matter, to go to the first step, according to you, they should have their frameworks down first.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So frameworks can be anything process and system orientated. So they could be anything from your knowledge and influence of using Getting Things Done by David Allen, which is a brilliant book, to anything as simple as how to manage your productivity using a Kanban board. The thing is with systems, it's sort of like a cherry-picked experience to some extent. Like everyone's systems are totally different. For example, some people might typically work well with something like time boxing or even with time tracking. It's really dependent on what that type of person does or what they typically learn well with. So for example, visual learners tend to go with visual note-taking applications and calendar-based systems because they like the ability to see their time and their tasks associated in one place, and the same with their notes. So you really do have to look at what guiding principles of your productivity are you going to cherry pick to bring everything together. You need to have strong fundamentals that drive you, because what that'll do is it will get you foundationally good. Because if, for example, you decide to just jump on the bandwagon with a new application, then you might not know how to use it effectively and really take advantage of not just the features, but the concepts themselves. So for example, here's a good example. Sun Salma, for example, has features that force you to limit how often you work. So for example, there's like, you can set like your 6 hour day or 8 hour day, and it'll start to be like red flagging you when you go over that time. If you're somebody that doesn't have their principles of productivity set so that they're working healthy hours, getting routine breaks, managing their to-do list with prioritization versus just everything you physically can get on your to-do list, then you're going to fail and Sun Salma is not going to be a good match for you. So it's important to get those things right before you leap in with a tool.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match with them, thanks to Indeed. With Indeed, you can ditch that busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, making their matching engine your go-to because it's constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. I used to be involved giving my input into the hiring process for a few key roles that were connected to mine. And man, do I wish we had Indeed back then, because we could have gotten much higher quality hires using Indeed. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job more visibility on Indeed.com at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. What's something that works so well, it basically feels like magic? For me, I'm thinking air conditioning, noise canceling headphones, definitely. Meeting free Fridays? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your own shop stage to the first real store stage, you don't have to just sell your own stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from brands you love and give your customers more variety and your business more sales. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify also helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyond. Again, go to shopify.com/beyond now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/beyond.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I was looking at the different categories on Tool Finder, and we've mentioned already, you know, note taking and to-do list or project management. Some people kind of see those as the same thing. They're probably actually separate. And calendar apps. And you've got those categories on Tool Finder, but you've got, I'm just going to list them. You've got note taking apps, which we've already called out. We've got to-do list apps. Again, project management, calendar. That's only half. Then you've got email apps. You've got all-in-one apps, which do a mixture of all the different things, most likely some sort of project management mixed with calendar, mixed with team communication. So that's the all-in-one apps. Then you've got team communication, like I just mentioned. And then the, you know, the most recent addition, probably AI tools. So one, I couldn't believe when I was looking at the site that there were as many tools that you had reviewed. Close to 800. And my thought is, are there ones that are defunct now and you still have up there, or are you keep, like, in other words, you're curating it, and if they're still in use, they're still existing, people can still go use them or buy them or purchase them or subscribe or whatever the monetization mechanism is for those software engineers to keep the tool running. That's the qualification for it to stay on the site.
Yeah, we keep updated with the site. I think there's probably around about 275 tools on there, but collectively over 10 years, I've reviewed about 800.
Okay.
And many have died.
That's right. Yes.
Sadly.
Many have gone. That's why I was like, wait a second, there's not that many, even though there's way more than I thought in some ways. So.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that over the years, there have been so many that have died. And even in the last month, if you go on the site, we've had to update all our calendar lists because Skiff calendar is gone. Cron calendar has been changed to Notion calendar. There's acquisitions right, left, and center. So it's what we're trying to do with the site is just be constantly updating it to be the best resource for just finding tools. And that comes from just because I'm so connected with the productivity providers that I'm able to keep updated with news, features, and upcoming tragedies, of course, if they decide to be shut down. But it's so good because I get to keep that site much more orientated versus with YouTube. It's so difficult because it's very linear. I post a video and then it's like lost in the subscription net, you know, although you could search it. So the site's becoming, hopefully in a year's time, it'll be much more of a dynamic experience where you're sort of guided through one way. Because at the moment, it's sort of like a directory with IMDb-like features.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, and that's the curious thing for me is like, so for example, an app, well, let's just take two, because there's two that are recently kind of, one that kind of resurrected, but is now under a different name, used to be known as Wunderlist, which I did use, and is now called Superlist, and randomly came across it in the feed. Wunderlist is back. It's now called Superlist. And I'm like, what? So I literally have no intention of switching. I don't need to do that unless you tell me otherwise. You're the expert.
I'm not an agony aunt, I promise.
Yes. Superlist comes back and I open it up and I'm looking through it and I'm like, oh, this UI is a little interesting. I don't know that I love it. And that's already something that I'm making mental notes about. What was your take? Like when you found out about Superlist, which was Wunderlist, which again, I used Wunderlist back in the day. What was your take on this when it came back?
Yeah. I've instantly put it in our best to-do list apps in the top 12 because it's really, really, like, for a launch, it's done a really good job. It sort of does a stranger thing in the productivity space where it combines notes and tasks, which is a bit weird. Like, that's not really very common. It's normally tasks in calendar or notes in calendar, but it's a very good build in terms of the experience. But Yeah, it's strange because they've been talking about releasing it since 2020. So about 4 years. I don't know whether this is true, but I don't know whether, because when Microsoft purchased Wunderlist, they had some sort of clause that was like, you can't do it in a certain, I'm probably talking rubbish, but I'm just guessing that they had to wait a certain amount of time to do that.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I'm trying to think. Now, Microsoft doesn't own them anymore. Is that right?
They turned Wunderlist into Microsoft To Do.
That's what it was. But now this is like the people that created that now doing their own new, in other words, we should stop calling it Wunderlist is back, because it's not. It's a whole new thing done by the same people that made it originally and then sold it to Microsoft. But
yeah.
To me, it's like, well, it's definitely, in terms of the aesthetic of it, it's definitely got that kind of things maintain, like you can check something and it's got a cross through. So you've got that visual representation, you know, because a lot of people, when it comes to to-do lists, they want to see and feel the reward of having crossed something off. Hence, lots of people add tons of things to a list just so they're like, well, I already did that and I already did that. So they can cross them off and feel a sense of internal momentum of some sort. So it's got some of that going for it. And I kind of get what they're going for with the whole, they're calling it Super List. So it's almost like a hybrid of, in a sense, Apple's reminders and notes put together.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. Like the interesting thing they're doing with it is like they're targeting it towards individuals, but I think what they're trying to do is get teams on it as a sort of like in the same strategy that Notion had, like where they got loads of personal users on and then everyone just started using it for teams because they loved it. And there are some really nice abilities on teams. It's like real time collaboration on tasks, which is really nice. It works really well. I have a good feeling that they'll be like constantly pushing the envelope. So yeah, kudos to them.
Yeah, it's definitely a welcome addition to the space for sure. We haven't had a lot of prominent or important, I guess, additions to the task management ecosystem recently, at least. But speaking of maybe archived or archaic ones, one of the other ones that I have officially, like I don't even own an account anymore is Evernote. So going the opposite direction. And what's funny was never intended to be a task management system. In a weird way, it had the ability to do lists. Yeah. It actually had the ability to do a lot of things. And you kind of just had to say, okay, what am I using this for? And then fit it into your framework. For me, it was a capture tool only. It was kind of that first default, oh, I have a thought. Oh, I have an audio note, or, oh, I'll clip this article there because I want to do something with it later. It was the inbox folder on my desk, but in a digital form. And I would capture from phone, desktop, etc. And then I would go through and I would sift through it and put those things in the right place. Like, oh, that's an idea that goes here. This is a thing that doesn't. And I wouldn't put tasks in there. That was never what I did. Tasks were somewhere else. This was more my filter, the beginning of my curation funnel for things I wanted to work on or things I wanted to share, social media posts, all that kind of good stuff. That's what I used it for. The fact is, I don't need that for that reason anymore. I have other things I can do that for and with, and have even kind of said, okay, parts of that workflow go over in this thing, other parts go over here, so that they weren't all in one place and it wasn't this big amorphous, almost self-assigned project of sifting through the beginning of that curation, because I'd done one extra step of curation on the front end. So that's kind of my framework there. But what's your experience, your take on Evernote? I'm curious.
Yeah. You know, like I miss the days of 2013 when it was like Evernote hype. It was beautiful, but it's changed so much. I think what they did wrong is that they had so many change of focus and ownership and instability between like 2013 and 2020 that it just lost all those users who were so loyal over the years. And now the new ownership, it's been just over a year that they've bought them officially. Personally, I have really good feelings about it, primarily because Bending Spoons is one of the best AI mobile developers in the world. And they don't just buy stuff willy-nilly. They develop fantastic applications like Splice and Rimini are some of the best image and photo applications on the market. They have expertise in so many different areas. And what's different about this new ownership is if you've seen some of their updates on social media and sort of releases, they spent, I believe it was the first 6 months to 9 months fixing the core infrastructure of Evernote again. So they've got it to their standards. And now in the last 3 months, they've actually been shipping features that people actually want, or maybe people have been waiting for like 8 years, but that's good. And I think it's another situation of like in a way, I'm not directly comparing it, but you know how sort of Twitter was taken over by Elon Musk and it sort of dropped a lot of people, but it also leaned up. The feature releases came more common. They focused on monetization. That's sort of what Evernote's done. They've lost a lot of their community, but they're actually producing a product now, whereas before they were sort of hemorrhaging. Yeah. And it's good now. I'm glad it's actually being, whether or not it's a success, I'm glad something's being done.
Yeah. Well, you are the first person in a while that I've heard say anything good about Evernote. So I don't think that's a bad thing.
I have a wild prediction that I said it when they were acquired. I think Evernote's going to become the mainstream note-taking app, and not like the one that productivity nerds use like me and you, but the one that everyone uses that just goes on the app store and finds a note-taking app, like everyday people. That's my check.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know what? I had a paid account for a very long time, and then at some point I downgraded it to just free. I even went through and was like, oh, I still have notes in here. And I went through some of those notes, and actually there was like ideas I had forgotten about, and I pulled those out and was like, oh, you could use this now.
Yeah.
But then at some point I just was like, okay, I closed my account. So I'd have to create a new account and everything, but we'll see. So to me, back in the day, Evernote had this simplicity to it.
Mm.
You could do a lot with it. I mean, you couldn't necessarily use it for a calendar, but you could use it for, you could just literally use it as a writing tool. You could use it as a note-taking tool, a list management tool. You could collaborate with other people. You could share back and forth. More than I'm even saying. Feels like there was kind of an expanding and a contracting at different times with what it could do or couldn't do bloat-wise or usability-wise or whatever. There's another tool that I honestly just, I've kind of tried and kind of said, nah. That's a darling to the productivity world that for me, I'm just like, it's too complicated and it can almost do too much. You either feel guilt for not using everything that it can do, or you feel overwhelmed by everything it can do. It's Notion. And
yes, I knew it.
I'm curious to get your take on Notion. We haven't done a Notion show ever. But again, part of that is I know there's so much that it can do that it kind of goes against the principles of the benefits of limitations and constraints, where you want one app that does one thing well, and then you've got that app covering that need, and then other needs you fill with, you know, others. In other words, as few all-in-ones as possible, which Notion seems to be.
Yeah. Notion is, so when Evernote was in its peak in like 2011 to 2013, it did the community really, really well. Like those 2 years, it listened to feedback, implemented it, and just got going with it. Whether or not that was good for the infrastructure of Evernote is a different story. But what Notion have done since 2018 is they've just constantly listened to their community, not focused too much on teams whilst they have, but they haven't. They focused on personal users, and they've just built a quality application. I remember in 2019, I went to visit the team and there was only 10 of them. At the time, and they were like a startup, and they're still like a startup. They still think like a startup, which is what you want with a productivity app. One of the reasons why Evernote sort of didn't continue very well. But I do think there's a problem with Notion, and it reminds me a lot of bullet journals. You know, like, I don't know whether you've like YouTubed bullet journals and seen the way that people make these gorgeous front covers. Like, it's beautiful art. But it doesn't contribute to productivity inside the notebook, if that makes sense. And it's the same with Notion. I call it Notion pruning. There are people who set up these fantastic spaces, start doing stuff, but then spend so much time going in, maintaining just constantly. And I think that for me is like not productive at all. So when you're looking at Notion, it's like you need to set and forget, ideally, or plan your prune time in. Because whilst it is a very visual application, that's what you need to do. Because there's so much going on, right?
Yes. It's so busy. I think that's the thing for me is like, it almost is the definition of a tool that you can just continue tweaking instead of using the tool.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Can be dangerous, productivity.
Yeah. My framework is I stay away from tools that have so much tweakability because I want something quick, easy, launches right where I need it to. I can drop things in, move them around, send them places. Like, it's just simplicity for me. Because again, I get distracted too easily. So it's like, I'd rather have a toolbox than two or three all-in-ones. I do better with that.
Oh no, like, I think you're 100% right. That's my opinion as well. I think AI is going to kill all that because I think it's going to go back to out-of-the-box tools. Like, if you were to able to prompt a Notion workspace for like, build me this, I don't know, build me a workspace for managing a pet shop in San Francisco. It needs to have X, Y, and Z built like this. It's actually something that a company called Catalog, beginning with a Q, they initially innovated on this, where it was a AI prompt-based building a workspace. And I really liked the concept, but their implementation was a bit difficult, I believe, from when I was testing it. But I think it's going that sort of way where we get a combination of prompt-based productivity apps and contextual-based productivity apps. So you will walk into your Notion in the future. You won't need to change anything, but everything will be dynamic where it brings up your aeroplane ticket that you've got from your email at the right time, just as about to fly. It'll bring up your note when it knows that you're about to start taking notes. And it just constantly breathes and lives what you're doing. So that's where I believe productivity is going. Just a constant assistant.
Yeah. To touch on the Apple ecosystem again, real quick, that makes me feel like the smart stack widgets on iPhone, where it's contextual. And it, again, that doesn't really, I have found it to try, it's trying to be smart, but it's not smart enough to really anticipate what I want in a given moment and takes up a lot of screen real estate for myself personally. So I don't really use that. I go for as minimalistic and simplistic as I possibly can on phone screens and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when it gets to the point of being smart enough and provides enough value, which I think we're starting to get close to, especially with some of the rumors of this next iOS, we're recording this in early 2024. The iOS that's supposed to come out later this year is supposed to be a very big overhaul that's going to include AI mixed in with it. And so Siri may suddenly become very, very smart. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. That remains to be seen.
I think Apple are sitting on the biggest productivity tools on the market. There's a really untouched area in productivity, and it's health and productivity, because we're going to lead, like, think about our jobs are going to be considerably less weight in our jobs, right? Then there's going to be a lot of focus on health in our jobs, right? So for example, right, your tracking systems will be able to understand the optimal time you're least stressed to focus on a deep work task. So it will be able to read your health vitals and plan your day around your health versus, you know, like, actually, so that you are the most productive you are and the most productive use of your time. It'll be insane. It'd be so good.
I mean, it's stuff that we as humans could, with time and effort, and that's the thing we don't have, is we're already feeling so busy. So our energy level to be able to put towards this extra project of tracking, you know, okay, I'm checking my sleep in the morning. How did I do last night? What are my average, you know, when's my peaks and troughs in terms of energy, attention, focus, et cetera, all those things. Yeah. What time of day is best for me to do which type of work? And for those types of tools to have that biometric data, when it has enough correlating data points to pull together in one place, like you said, it'll be able to start to prescribe actual things that are useful versus just come up with possible suggestions.
Yeah. And it's interesting because if you view it like that, then third-party productivity apps become a little bit vulnerable. And that's probably where then, you know, like this concept of like engines. So for example, you've got an AI engine, which could be OpenAI or Apple's Siri, or maybe Google's Gemini. Imagine if those engines are the ones that power the productivity apps that we use. So it's like you've got a chassis, which is the, say, Todoist, and then you've got an engine, which is the Siri operating system. So it very much changes that entire landscape of productivity and puts it back in the hands of Apple, Google, and OpenAI again, which is a shame.
Yeah. And the thing they've got to be careful about, I mean, again, Apple's walked a fine line with Sherlocking, which some people may not know. I'll just quickly say what it does is essentially Apple occasionally, and it happens, they duplicate functionality from existing apps that are not their own into their own. But sometimes that doesn't shut down the app. Like they've done it recently with journaling, and that's not killed day one, one of the most popular iOS journaling and web-based apps that there are. But that's the key, is Apple has to be very careful, and Google for that matter, and everybody else have to be careful about not upsetting their developers that create for their ecosystem. So
yeah, it's a fine line. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I've got too much jobs to do now.
Yeah. Well, it means you've got endless fodder to continue making your videos on the YouTube, as well as new things coming out to put in Tool Finder. So I would love to point people towards connecting with you and one, your newsletter, your site, your YouTube channel. Let's get people over to where they can find out more of this work that you're doing, because it's important.
Honestly, thank you for having me on. I love chatting this sort of stuff. So it's been the perfect conversation. Yeah, if people want to find me, I'm on Twitter under my name, but also you can use Toolfinder as a resource at toolfinder.co. And then you can browse the YouTube channel, which has in-depth reviews. There'll be more coming. We're going to be doubling down on that. So thank you for having me on, Eric. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you here. And again, I'll link up to everything in the show notes for this episode. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your listening to-do list. I hope that you got a lot out of this. I knew that I wanted to have Francesco on for a while, and I knew that his topic of choosing the right productivity tools would resonate with a lot of people, especially us who like to procrastinate by pretending we're doing work because we're playing around with tools, or we're, air quotes, testing the tools out. I love that he really talks about, look, you don't want to just test tools for the sake of testing tools, although that is what he does. But that's his mission. That's his purpose. He brings us that tool testing so that we don't have to a certain extent. And I really, really appreciate that. I hope that you can find some value in, especially toolfinder.co, because I certainly am. But if you found value in that and this conversation, I would love for you to share this conversation, this podcast episode, on social media. Click the share button in your podcast player app of choice, wherever you're listening to this, or head on over to the show notes at beyondthetodolist.com. Either of those places, share this episode out about a better way to find and implement the productivity tools that are going to best help you not just plan your work, not just organize your work, but do the work portion of it, and even the retroactive cataloging of projects, etc. You'll find all that good stuff there in the show notes, as well as toolfinder.co. Thank you so much for sharing this episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next episode.